Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with the Pulitzer Prize winning author, Glenn Frankel, who's contributing to an awesome event over at the Avalon Theater. It's all films all about the Hollywood blacklist and obviously how that, you know, still applies today. And of course, Glenn is involved because you're promoting your new book called High Noon, The Hollywood Blacklist and the Making of an American Classic. Glenn, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jason.
Awesome. Well, I want to talk about all the movies that are screening for sure, but let's talk about your baby here, High Noon. I mean, that is the, you know, when I think of the old Hollywood blacklist and McCarthyism, I think of that movie. Why don't you tell our listeners why that's so thematically, Gary Cooper there in the movie, you know, why that's so tied into the blacklist?
Well, it begins with Carl Foreman, the screenwriter, who basically invented the story. And Carl had been in the American Communist Party in the late 30s and early 40s. And as his stature grew, he became a target in 1951. So he's finishing the screenplay at the same time. He receives a subpoena for the House Committee on Un-American Activities to testify about so-called communist infiltration. And he knows it isn't going to be enough just to say, hey, I'm terribly sorry. I was once in the party. Big mistake. I'm gone now. I'm not in it now. He knew he was going to have to implicate other people, accuse other people of being subversives at a public hearing in order to get himself off the hook. So he faces this terrible dilemma. At the same time, he's finishing the screenplay about a marshal who also faces a terrible dilemma of whether to stand up to the bad guys who are coming to town to kill him or to turn tail and run. And so Carl began to see himself as the marshal, and so the High Noon becomes something of a blacklist parable.
Absolutely. I mean, we all remember those scenes of Gary Cooper trying to go in. I guess he goes into the church to try to recruit some deputies, and no one wants to help him. He basically goes everywhere in town until that, you know, famous shot where the camera pulls up, showing him all alone in the middle of the street. Even Grace Kelly runs away from him before coming back. But that's so true. That's so true. Just talk about how a lot of these guys, like I know for Trumbo, for instance, a lot of those guys had to write right under fronts back in that day.
That's right. Dalton Trumbo was one of the original Hollywood 10. These were 10 guys who more or less were still in the Communist Party in 1947 when they were called to testify. They refused to cooperate. Eventually, they all went to prison for up to a year for contempt of Congress. They come out, and most of them are writers, and, you know, they got to eat, but they can't work. They've been fired from their studios. They've been purged. And so a lot of them write under pseudonyms, and Trumbo was, you know, the biggest factory of them, a script factory of them all. He worked on dozens of things over those years, but of course, he made much less money than he would have made under his own name originally. He had to scrimp and save. All those guys faced serious problems. For Carl Foreman, eventually he had to leave the country and move to London and wrote under pseudonyms there for several years.
Yeah, it's funny that Hollywood audiences at the time had no idea when they were watching, you know, Roman Holiday or Spartacus or any of those movies that it was actually a fake name being used there because of all this. That's crazy. And I'm sure you've seen the great Martin Ritt, Woody Allen movie, The Front, right? Where Zero Mostel even leaps out of a window. But, you know, explain like sort of how the emotional and mental toll, like here's in that movie, a guy commits suicide over this.
Well, you know, they face this terrible dilemma. Either you rat out your friends or you lose your wonderful job. And, you know, they had families. They had bills to pay. For Carl, he was at the apex of his career. And so to defy the committee and refuse to cooperate meant the end of that golden career in every real sense. So these guys all have to scramble in various ways. And, you know, people died young. The great John Garfield, an actor who refused to cooperate, died of heart failure a few months later. You know, there were health problems. Families broke up. The biggest problem, you know, but one of the things that's so fascinating about it, Jason, is that it wasn't your political enemies who you were most concerned about or did the most damage. It was your friends.
Right.
It was your business partners, the people you'd worked with, the ones who are now either shunning you or ratting you out to the committee. That's where the really unhealed scars of the wounds of the blacklist still linger.
And that, speaking of like your friends, and it's such a great point that you make there, Glenn, because I remember watching what Bryan Cranston movie in Trumbo, playing Dalton Trumbo, and you sort of see how all your old friends started taking sides. I guess it was Edward G. Robinson and John Wayne sort of came down on one side of it, and then you had your Trumbos and your Foremans on the other side of it. So it really did kind of break up friendships.
It did indeed, and business partnerships. Carl lost his place at the Stanley Kramer Company. There wasn't any good choice here. You know, anything you did wasn't going to work. You were either going to lose your job, lose your friends. And, it was a terrible moment. I feel, a great deal of sympathy for all the folks who were caught up in this thing. And the question, of course, we have to ask ourselves, if we were caught in that moment, Jason, what would we do?
Exactly. It's so true. No, it's so heartbreaking. I'm picturing, now you can't listen to the Ballad of High Noon the same anymore. It's almost Foreman saying, do not forsake me, all my colleagues. Oh, that's great. Okay, cool. Well, let's go into your book more. I mean, what else? I mean, you probably go into everything we've already talked about, but what other juicy nuggets are in there? Why we should pick up this thing?
Well, good question. I mean, for one thing, the Blacklist has some eerie resonances today, I would say. You know, a lot of we have a wonderful democracy, but sometimes it doesn't, it turns out to be a lot more fragile than we think. And during the Blacklist era, the three bodies of, of government, the political parties, the press, they all let us down in many ways. And, political dissidents were persecuted and purged. And I think we're facing another moment today about democracy and where our democracy is facing a real test. I don't care if you're liberal or conservative. I mean, there's no question that there's a lot at stake right now. And the question is, which of these institutions are going to stand up today and speak for democracy, and which ones are going to fold? So there's a contemporary relevance to this. But also, it's a fun book, or at least I hope it is, because I also write about the making of High Noon, this fabulous movie, and the great Gary Cooper, this Montana cowboy who shows up in Hollywood one day and ends up being the biggest star for about 25 years and has affairs with just about every attractive woman he co-stars with or meets along the way. So, it's a political story, but it's also a story of Hollywood and the culture and what was happening there, a sort of anthropological study of Hollywood, though that makes it sound a little more serious than it is.
No, you're allowed to sound serious. You have all the credibility in the world, my friend. Remind our listeners, maybe younger listeners who didn't read your journalism, but why, your work that got you the Pulitzer. I think it was back in the late 80s or early 90s, your coverage of Israel in the Middle East. Explain.
Well, I was a longtime Washington Post journalist, and I spent about 14 years as a foreign correspondent. And yes, I was the Jerusalem bureau chief of the Washington Post in the late 80s. And that's the time of the first Palestinian uprising. And it was an amazing thing to cover. And I was very fortunate to win the Pulitzer Prize in 1989 for that work. So, I spent 27 years at the Post. I've taught journalism at Stanford and the University of Texas. Well, now I'm writing books full time, and I'm in this interesting little subgenre of books about American history that also tie into great American film. I did one about the great John Wayne movie, The Searchers, and the Texan Comanche Wars, and
that's a great movie, man.
And now High Noon is keeping me going.
That's awesome. Well, I know High Noon is sort of the big culminating centerpiece, I think, on Sunday, April 30th of this festival. But they have a couple other really, important films that tie into the same theme. We already mentioned Trumbo. That'll be screening a lot. And also Good Night and Good Luck, with the Edward R. Murrow story. Explain, obviously, how that one ties in.
Well, Edward R. Murrow did a documentary, I see it now, show about Senator Joe McCarthy. The House Un-American Activities Committee kept doing its work, but then McCarthy got into the game and was even more virulent and more toxic, if you will. And Murrow and his guys finally took McCarthy on in 1953 and 54, and it's a sort of seminal moment in the press growing up and facing up to its obligations. I think journalists had basically let us down during that era, but a few of them stood tall, a couple of guys at the Washington Post, incidentally, including Herb Block, the great political cartoonist. But then Edward R. Murrow comes on, and that sort of is the death knell for McCarthy in many ways when Murrow takes him on.
Absolutely. And it's just a fabulous film directed by George Clooney, who also plays Fred Friendly, of course, another journalism titan. I love that movie with the black and white and everything. It's just great. And they're also showing The Way We Were, which a lot of people remember for, you know, it's Robert Redford, Barbara Streisand romance, The Tragic Memories. But explain, they might have forgotten that it's a very much political movie.
Very much. Well, Barbara plays a young commie on campus who meets the beautiful Robert Redford. This is a movie where it's the damsel is the guy. You know, he's the waspy, beautiful blonde, and she's the commie. And they have many political discussions along the way. He becomes a screenwriter, but he's a cynic. He's not politically committed. She is. And so that thread of politics is running through it. But I got to tell you, in the end of the day, it's a love story by two people who never should have gotten together. And but it's a beautiful song. They're great actors, and it's beautifully shot. So I don't take it too seriously, but I really enjoyed seeing it again. It's been about 40 years.
Yeah, man, that Marvin Hamlisch, the late Marvin Hamlisch, that music is just great. And of course, Streisand belting it. And of course, the late Sidney Pollack directed it too. So yeah, it's definitely a legendary one for sure. All right, and it all builds to your, you know, the big High Noon screening. Then of course, you're going to be, you know, giving a little Q&A too. Explain who, I think Kathleen Matthews, right, is going to be interviewing you?
She's the moderator, and she's going to be asking the questions, and I'm going to do my best to give the answers. And, you know, we'll talk about the history. We'll talk about the Blacklist. We'll also talk about the making of High Noon, which was this just little bitty throwaway movie, black and white movie that nobody expected was going to be anything terribly special. And everyone was very surprised at how well it did and how popular it was and how much money it made. And here we are, 65 years later, it's still considered one of the great Hollywood movies. So we'll talk a lot about that.
Awesome. And we can't wait to hear how this allegory holds up to today, because there are a lot of parallels, sir. Hey, we really appreciate you taking the time, Glenn. It sounds like an awesome event. So everybody catch out the films before building up to Glenn's big night. It's going to be great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason. Good to talk to you.
You too.